Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Ralph Bakshi's 1992 film Cool World. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
What's up, dude?
Not much. Joining us today, again, returning to the show, is our good friend Eric D. Snyder of film.com and ericdsnyder.com and a bunch of other places. Eric, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me. This is my third time.
It is. Yeah, you're getting up there.
Triple threat.
So if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I've got the character name game for this week. We'll make it an easy one. The character's name is Eric Lencher. Eric Lencher. So at the very end of the episode, we'll come back and Eric will slay.
I didn't even have to cheat. I actually know who that is.
You want to let him just guess right now?
Sure. You know what? Let's throw everything into
unprecedented.
Yep, and just do it now. Go ahead.
Isn't Eric Lencher the name of the young? From X-Men.
Yes.
What's his name?
Fassbender.
Fassbender, yeah, because he's in Shame, and it's whatever character he played.
Yes, it's Magneto.
Magneto, yes.
Right, indeed.
Nice.
That's right. Well done.
Wow. See, well, I sort of knew.
The reason that we had to do it that way was because no movies came out in wide release this weekend, and Shame was pretty much the only thing that came out
porno
in limited release. So, yeah, that was a good one.
Are X-rated films part of the like the pool of movies we can choose from?
I don't if they come out in some like, sort of wide or limited release, Tyler. I guess we're good.
Like if this. Ain't the Munsters or so whatever those
oh lord I don't know if you could find a connection
that would be hilarious. We have like a real legitimate guest on, like I don't know
hey,
somebody
wait, wait, hey. James hey, what Wood. Am I what am I
you, you I mean I meant like a like never mind I've offended
yeah, all right
I'm all right
I like
you
how
are a legitimate guest
Eric he considers James Woods a legitimate guest but not you.
He's more legitimate than me I guess but still.
Oh man. Okay.
Yeah, but right. But Snyder knows our humor. That's I think.
Yeah. No. I'm
I only
think.
I, no offense. I'm
I know. I'm only kidding.
Okay. Good. I'm sweating now. You're never coming back.
All right. Well, wipe your brow off, Tyler. Let's jump into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to recently, or books, or comics, or pop culture, or anything, TV shows, movies. Tyler, let's start with you. What have you been consuming this past week?
Well, this week, let's see, on the Science Channel, I don't know if it was only on the Science Channel or if it was just appearing on the Science Channel, but this documentary called Trek Nation, have you seen this? Have you heard of this?
I actually, my roommate was watching a little bit of this, and I kind of wandered into the room just for a second, but I didn't see all of it. Tell us what it's about.
Snyder, have you seen this?
No, it's about Star Trek?
Yes. Oh, it's more so about Gene Roddenberry, the creator. Of Star Trek, like his son made this movie, and I guess he was a teenager or something when Roddenberry died, Gene died, and he didn't really know him that well, so he kind of took a camera and started asking all these different people who had worked with Gene Roddenberry in the past and kind of asked him what he was all about and kind of tried to see how he ticked. And of course he did like the whole, oh yeah, here are the fans, and he'd go to conventions and stuff. Basically, like that one movie we watched, Ben, that I can't remember the name of.
I think it was called Trekkies, actually. Like
yeah, Trekkies.
Oh yeah,
documentary.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of that, and there was a little bit of, you know, the philosophical structure of the show, and like how Roddenberry wrote and things like that. So it was pretty interesting. It was like a movie. I mean, it was 2 hours TV time.
Okay.
And you know, his son. Kind of comes off as dopey, but other than that, I mean, you know, just physically, not personally.
Intellectually.
Yeah. But he seemed all right. But the part that stuck out to me was back when the show was on, the Nichelle Nichols, who played Uhura, mm-hmm. was ready to quit after the first season. She was like, I'm leaving the show. And then like the next week or something, like the week before shooting was over, she met Martin Luther King, and he said they watch Star Trek all the time. That's the one they leave their kids on for, or they let their kids stay up for. And
yeah.
And she's like, oh yeah, you know, I was thinking about quitting, or I think I'm going to quit. And King was like, you know, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that. Because, you know, in the show, you don't have a black role. You don't have a women's role. You have, like, an equal role as part of the crew. And it was, like, a good, way of showing, you know, that type of equality.
Social progression and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and that, you know, that kind of the equality on television, when you really didn't see that back in the 60s, where you saw white and black people and men and women working together and kind of one equal goal or whatever you're talking about. So she decided to stay on.
And Captain Kirk kissed, and it was the first interracial kiss on TV.
That's correct.
Yep. Yep.
That's a thing that I know. It's a bit of trivia that I happen to know about Star Trek.
But yeah, it was good. I mean, it might be on demand maybe, or it might be shown again soon on the Science Channel. So check your local listings.
Nice.
The next thing that I've been listening to is a book on tape called Universe in a Nutshell by Dr. Stephen Hawking.
Oh, wow.
Is it Hawking or Hawkings? I should know that.
Hawking, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's singular. I don't think it's plural.
Just the one of them.
Like George Reeve and Christopher Reeves are
right.
Get that up too.
Yep.
It's pretty interesting. I've mentioned the Nova series that they had on earlier this month or last month about the physics and quantum theory
and
relativity, yeah, stuff like that. And the book is very similar, although it's kind of got some wit to it. It's not like a boring science book or anything. I mean, he talks about a lot of science that probably goes over my head, but it's not the kind of book that's like ha-ha funny. I think Brian Greene dumbed it down a little bit in this series, but Hawking kind of, takes it to another level. Like, I think he's speaking to people that already know about physics and they just want to know what his views on physics are. But it's still fairly interesting, just kind of what he talks about. Each chapter, he talks about something new. He talks about wormholes. Can we travel back in time? Can we predict the future? You know, what kind of future are we going to have? Things like that. He uses science and his version of humor that's a pretty good read, or a listen to, whatever you want to refer to it as.
Good.
It's just amazing though, like, he's completely, he's a complete paralysis, but he can still speak, and it's just amazing what technology has allowed for us to unlock great minds like that, even though physically we wouldn't be able to hear what's inside their head.
Yeah. Cool.
But other than that, that's it. Media consumed.
All right, right on. Eric, what have you been watching or consuming this week?
I've been watching just a shitload of movies because it's the end of the year, so there's all the, all the movies coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw a bunch this week. What did I watch? War Horse, Melancholia, Young Adult, A Dangerous Method, Carnage.
Wow.
I know, it was busy.
That's
Is that
a
all
lot.
The movie?
then I also watched Under the Cherry Moon and Pearl Harbor. Which, the other end of the spectrum. The other end of the prestige spectrum.
Was that for a column you're working on?
Yeah, Under the Cherry Moon is for Eric's Bad Movies at film.com.
Okay.
That was Prince's movie. After Purple Rain, he followed it up with Under the Cherry Moon.
I've never heard of that. What is it about?
Well, Purple Rain was in 84, and it was popular because it was basically just kind of a long music video. Like, the story was kind of dumb, and the acting was dumb, but it was a cool music video, basically. So then for his follow-up, Under the Cherry Moon, 2 years later, it has almost no music, and it's all about the story and characters. And it's terrible.
Okay.
It's terrible. And he plays like a would-be gigolo, a hustler on the French Riviera, trying to hook up with rich women.
Sure.
And he scams.
Prince is prone to do.
Well, exactly, yeah. Because what woman doesn't love a scrawny, glittery midget with a John Waters mustache? all women love that. And it's Kristen Scott Thomas's first movie. Kristen Scott Thomas plays this young woman who's the heiress to a great fortune, and Prince tries to woo her and charm her. And It's in black and white for no reason, just to be pretentious. Yeah, it's really hard to watch. It's really unbearable. But he dies at the end, so there's that.
Oh.
Okay.
It's weird that it's in black and white because of Prince's affinity towards colors, both in
movies and in song. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I don't
Strawberry
know why.
Strawberry beret, little red Corvette.
I think it's raspberry beret, but okay.
It's raspberry beret, what? Yeah.
Blueberry, huckleberry, sure. Whatever.
Sure, yep. Yeah.
Okay. So this is obviously something that you wouldn't recommend for people to
no.
watch.
No, although it is on Netflix Instant if you want to check it out and just enjoy some of the terribleness of it.
Okay.
Just choose any random 5-minute chunk of it and you'll say, wow, this is a bad movie.
Good stuff.
But we do recommend people reading your My Bad Movie article on it.
Yeah.
Yes, please do. Film.com.
Definitely. So out of that other slew of films that you mentioned, do you have any other, maybe one in particular that stood out to you that you wanted to mention? Either as maybe like the best or the worst of the bunch?
Unfortunately, all those new films coming out that I named, none of them, I don't think any of them are great. Like Young Adult, I think is good. And Melancholia is good, and Dangerous Method's all right, and Carnage is all right. War Horse I didn't really like.
Okay.
But yeah, none of those have jumped out at me yet. I'm still waiting to see what'll happen with Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close.
Yes.
And of course, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Mm-hmm. I've got a screener of We Need to Talk About Kevin, and everyone keeps saying that's really good.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that one. It played at the AFI Film Festival here, and I didn't get a chance to see it. But, yeah, I've heard some interesting things about that one, too.
And it's about Kevin Nealon, right?
Man, I was...
Kevin, he's caught.
I was trying to come up with the kid's last name from Home Alone, and like his name escaped
Kevin
me.
Isn't McAllister.
McAllister. Oh, man. Snyder. One step ahead, as always.
Sorry.
Cool. All right. Good stuff. Well, I've got a couple things that I wanted to mention for mine. First of all, I'll just talk about this briefly. I saw a documentary today called The Rockafire Explosion. Have you guys ever heard of this?
No.
Okay. So nope. The Rockafire Explosion is a band of animatronic robots that played in Showbiz Pizza Place before it was kind of bought out by Chuck E. Cheese's. So,
right. Oh, yeah. I remember those guys.
Yeah. So
I remember Showbiz Pizza. Yeah.
Okay. That's actually, I'm glad that we have you on here, Eric, because I know that you're a little bit older than both Tyler and I don't really remember Showbiz Pizza growing up as a kid. I remember Chuck E. Cheese because those were very kind of, prominent. Throughout the South, where Tyler grew up eventually, but I grew up predominantly. Anyway,
I don't remember ever going to Showbiz Pizza, but I remember it. I remember seeing commercials for it because I think Chuck E. Cheese buy it? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It didn't really get too much into the specifics of how that whole thing went down in this documentary. The documentary is called The Rockafire Explosion, and it kind of is about this subculture of people who are just obsessed with this animatronic band, and they were really distraught when Chuck E. Cheese came in and kind of took over Showbiz Pizza Place and replaced all of the characters in this band with Chuck E. Cheese and his merry
band.
So
sad, dude.
It was kind of sad, yeah.
It was like when the Monkees replaced the Beatles.
Yeah, except these people were even more pissed off than those people were, I'm sure. There's like this guy... his name is not important, so I'm not even going to mention it. But anyway, he bought all of these animatronic robots from this warehouse in Orlando, Florida, Tyler, where you're living now. And
whoa.
He's recreated this entire thing in his house. He's built everything to this, the specifications or whatever. And he's just like, he operates it for free in his house, and like random people will come over and have parties there. I should also mention that this guy drinks exclusively Mountain Dew. That's it. Gosh. Like for no other, I don't know. That has no bearing on the rest of the documentary. It's just mentioned.
I'll tell you something else about this guy.
Yes.
When he moves into your neighborhood, he's required by law to go around to his neighbors and tell you that he's moved into your neighborhood.
Unfortunately, you do get a little bit of that vibe from him.
He probably tucks the cuffs of his jeans into his socks too, doesn't he?
He drives a van that doesn't have windows.
So
he's got one too many medallions on his chest hair. It's just
so If you guys, if the listeners want to see if all of these claims that Tyler and Eric are making are accurate, this thing is on Netflix Instant. It's only an hour and 11 minutes. So I would
What's it called
say,
again?
It's called The Rockefeller Explosion. I don't know if I would necessarily recommend it to people, but if you remember The Rockefeller Explosion, it's got to be interesting for you, because it kind of chronicles like this community of people that are really excited about this. And actually, I don't know if you guys, you probably don't remember, but I only remembered because they played a clip of it in this documentary. But a couple years ago, this one video went viral, as they say, and the guy who is the subject of this documentary reprogrammed his own personal Rockefeller Explosion to play modern pop songs and videotaped it and put them online.
Oh, I think I do remember that.
Yeah, and they played like Usher's Love in This Club and Hey There Delilah and a couple of other popular songs at the time. So people who are listening to this, if you remember that and want to get like, you know, the really nitty gritty full story behind the Rockefeller Explosion, you can check that out on Netflix. So
you know what used to scare the shit out of me?
What's that?
Well, you would be at Chuck E. Cheese or Shelby Pizza, whatever it was. And you would walk up and you would like peek behind the curtain when the band wasn't doing its thing. Mm-hmm. And so they just stood there and you could see like the silhouettes of them.
Yeah.
These big robots and they're just waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To attack the children or whatever their plans were.
It's funny because the guy.
The country bears of the poor Midwest.
The guy actually talks about that exact thing in this documentary. So.
Oh. God, I'm on the path to this guy. Kill me now. Hari Kari.
All right. So the other movie that I saw that I wanted to bring up is one that's called You Can't Take It With You. And this was directed by Frank Capra back in 1938. So I'm going old school here. I should also mention Rockefeller Explosion came out in 2008, just for anyone who's wondering. But You Can't Take It With You was based on a play, which I didn't know. It makes a lot of sense. And it's it won Best Picture, Best Director. I mean, this is one of these kind of big, highly acclaimed films from the late 30s. And it has a lot of the same themes as It's a Wonderful Life, which is the Christmas movie with Jimmy Stewart that was also directed by Frank Capra.
Watched it last night.
Tyler, I assume you have not seen You Can't Take It With You. Is that all right?
That is correct. Yeah.
Okay. Eric, have you by any chance?
I haven't seen the 1938 one. I was actually in a production of the play when I was in high school.
No way. That's awesome.
I was. I was the guy who plays the xylophone or something.
Okay. Yeah.
We changed it to a piano in the play because we didn't have a xylophone, but yeah, I was that guy.
Strangely, I can totally see you as that character.
So. Awesome. I saw there was a production of it on like PBS in the 80s that I saw with Jason Robards was in it, and I can't think who the woman was. Anyway, the short answer to your question is no, I haven't seen that one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean...
But I know the show you're talking about.
Yeah, I just wanted to see it because, you know, I'm trying to eventually, over the course of the next, whatever, 10 years or however long it takes me, go through all the Best Picture winners. And, you know, because I feel like every kind of, you know, hardcore movie fan goes through a phase of that, you know, at some point. And I'm just kind of... That's where I am right now. So... yeah, I don't know. I'm a big fan of It's a Wonderful Life. It's like one of my favorite Christmas movies, and I figured, yeah, why not watch the same team kind of tackle the same type of thing? And it's interesting because not only does this movie star Jimmy Stewart, also stars Lionel Barrymore, who played like the villain in It's a Wonderful Life, and he plays like
Mr. Potter.
Yeah, the total opposite character in this movie. So it's really kind of a fun watch for people who may be really familiar with It's a Wonderful Life because it's played on TV constantly every year. And this one I feel like is a lot more underseen and I don't know if it's undervalued because it won Best Picture, but...
But people don't really talk about it anymore.
Right.
Like even when you name like Frank Capra's best movies, they say It's a Wonderful Life and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, mm-hmm. but they don't mention... You can
yeah.
take it with.
So, yeah, I mean, I liked it for what it was. You know, it's definitely a movie of its time. So, you know, people have to kind of always take that stuff into consideration before they, you know, see things and kind of have expectations and whatnot. But, yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought it was really well done and kind of an interesting switch of the Lionel Barrymore roles from those two films. So You Can't Take It With You. I got that on DVD through Netflix, so it's not available streaming right now. So there's that. And then finally, the last thing that I wanted to mention was, Tyler, you and I have talked a little bit about this TV show called Once Upon a Time that is on ABC right now. I think it's on Sunday nights. And
remember that.
me in particular, I recall kind of railing on the show a little bit for what I presumed was the creators of the show stealing ideas from a comic series called Fables, which was written by Bill Willingham. And Willingham himself had remained quiet about all of this up until today, dun dun dun, and he released this big interview that he conducted with himself, in which he asks the questions and answers them at comicbookresources.com. And Tyler, you got a chance to read this, right?
I did.
So the gist of this thing was what? Well, like, where do you think he came down? What was he trying to get at here with this whole thing?
He was like, you know, people relax, it's just a TV show.
Yeah, I think that's
basically
probably, that's simple. Yes,
to cite the Mystery Science Theater theme song, "Relax, it's just a television show."
Yeah,
exactly.
So basically, he kind of he denies that the creators of Once Upon a Time outright stole anything from him. He says that yeah, sure, they were probably influenced by Fables and. Just as everyone who ever sees any piece of content kind of absorbs it and then maybe recontextualizes it when they create something in that similar genre. That's kind of that's a good portion of what this interview says, is kind of basically giving them a pass, the creators of the show, which were some of the head writers on Lost, and just saying, yeah, just because it's a story set in modern times that features fairy tale characters doesn't necessarily mean that I have the monopoly on that kind of storytelling and they stole this directly from me, whatever. My take on this is I think he's being really generous with them.
Are there more details than just fairy tale characters in a modern setting that are similar between the TV show and his thing?
Yeah, like the characters in both worlds take on like modern day jobs. They're living in plain sight. There's a
right.
lot of yeah. There's
well, but I mean, you would expect that. I mean, given the basic premise of fairy tale characters in the modern world, I mean that it follows that they would also have jobs and stuff. I just wonder, like, because isn't the TV show some ongoing thing where they don't remember? They don't remember where they came from. Or
yeah,
something.
That one thing is not the same. They're living. It's kind of weird to get into the full on comparisons between the two, because I haven't read Fables in a little while. But basically, the characters in Fables live in New York City, but it's also this kind of shaded off version of New York that regular people don't necessarily wander into. It's kind of like their own little section somehow. It's not really. Fully explained. And then same type of thing in Once Upon a Time, the characters live in this town in Maine, I think it's called Storybrooke, and nobody ever really comes in or out of the town. They don't know that they're living there. They've all had this kind of mind wipe thing as a big spell cast on them from an evil witch and things of that sort.
Willingham was saying was, I got a lot of my ideas for Fables from other things that had did the storybook fairy tale thing before. He cited the Tenth Kingdom and all these other things.
Yeah,
and
that's not new anyway.
Yeah, he's like, I did it. It wasn't new. They're doing it. Isn't new. Like, we're all just using these original stories in different ways, although it may seem fairly similar. I mean, you know, he said, I think in one part, he's like, well, obviously everybody's nowadays is making something where something supernatural or something magical exists in our world.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's doing that. So he actually said, he's like, I really don't see any worthwhile comparisons. It's just a new take on the same stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well said. So that's,
there was a sitcom. Do you remember no, you wouldn't. In the '80s, there was a sitcom called The Charmings, and it was Snow White and Prince Charming, were like magically transported to modern times. It was really a show. It was really a show. And she had the magic mirror and everything.
Wow. Okay. No, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. It was, I think it probably only ran for a year.
Yeah.
But I remember it. I was a kid and I was fascinated by the idea of, oh my gosh, fairy tale characters, but they're in our time.
Yeah.
It was like the most amazing idea ever.
Yeah, so I guess just to put a cap on this discussion, Tyler, are you still watching Once Upon a Time? Did you? I don't remember what your status was as far as watching that show.
I'm still watching it. It's getting pretty good, actually.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say I stopped watching it a couple weeks ago.
They had a pretty intense mining episode last week.
Mining episode?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. I actually, the only new show that I'm continuing to watch is Pan Am, inexplicably. All of the other ones that I've talked about, Terra Nova, all of these other things, if you go back and listen to, like, the past, I don't know, 6 episodes, we've talked about a bunch of these new shows, and I've just stopped watching all of them because none of them have really done enough
now,
to...
Pan Am is getting canceled now, isn't it?
There's rumors about that. Nobody's really come out and said exactly what's happening, but yeah, it's probably going to
when
be
there are rumors about cancellation, there's yeah. a good there's a 98% chance you're mm-hmm. canceled.
I'll come out and say it. It's canceled.
You've heard it here first, folks. Yeah. Pan Am is not panning out. That's the headline.
Oh.
Cancellation.
Nice.
Pan Am crash landing. Pan Am
took a Pan ratings Am, nosedive.
Yeah.
Pan Am is now called Pan Was.
Oh my God.
I had to make sure I was gonna say it right.
Oh man, that's the best. All right, well, with that, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Cool World.
During his 10 years in prison, Jack Deebs created his own world. It made him very successful.
You're Jack Deebs, the creator of Cool World, right? I can't believe this.
Now he thinks he's going home to the real world. But he's wrong. Real wrong.
Welcome to my world.
You're not in Kansas anymore!
Freeze. Cool World Police.
I'm a cartoonist. I drew all this.
This place exists with or without you.
Get a little closer here, babe. Give us a gift.
Go away.
I'm out of here.
I've been waiting for you, darling.
Noids do not have sex with doodles. It's the oldest law in Cool World.
And if that happens, you call me.
I got it, boss.
Since it's only a dream, indulge your fantasies. The man is in the bedroom.
Are you gonna follow the rules? Or are you gonna follow your instincts?
You're about to make an unscheduled trip to the other side.
All right, guys, so Cool World came out in 1992. This movie was directed by Ralph Bakshi, and it stars Kim Basinger, Gabriel Byrne, and Brad Pitt, surprisingly. This movie is a mixture of live action and animation, very much in the same vein as Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And let's go with Eric. What did you think about Cool World?
Well, I have to tell you, I was delighted when you said you were talking about this movie and asked if I wanted to be on the show, because I have a personal history with this movie.
Okay.
It came out in 1992, and you guys were like in first grade, maybe, or something. And I was in high school, and my friend and I went to see it at the theater, and it was to that time, and for a long time after, the only movie I'd ever walked out of.
Wow.
It was just so stupid. It was so bad. And we just didn't have any patience for it. We just like, let's, and we went home and we watched tapes of Ren and Stimpy. little time capsule for you there, 1992.
There you go.
And I remembered, and then Brad Pitt sort of became, you know, a guy. And I was like, Brad, the guy from Cool World? What?
That was like, your reference
for a long,
point.
For a long time, yeah. He was kind of tainted in my mind for a long time. And he's really bad in it. He's just so wooden and bland.
Yeah.
But it took me a while to get over that with him.
Okay.
Eric, promise me when you meet Brad Pitt as a journalist that you forget everything he's done, surprised to see him, and say, hey, you're the guy from Cool World. Like, that'd shake awesome. His hand, like, really aggressively and be like, you're the guy from Cool World, right?
What have you been doing since then?
When's that sequel coming?
That ego would crash land.
No, he'd probably laugh about it.
So, Tyler, what about you? What did you think about Cool World?
Yeah, I thought Cool World would be, like, hip and, like an update to Roger Rabbit. But as I found out, there was a lot. Just, you know, I would have probably walked out in high school as I was in high school. I don't really know what I was like in high school anymore, but I probably would have walked out in this. It was increasingly stupid and not even outrageous in a good way, just kind of far-fetched, even in a movie that involves cartoons. Yeah, I was like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. And they make up rules as they go along that don't make any sense.
Yep.
Like, from the very the beginning and the end and everything in between, like, makes no sense. You're just like, this is a movie? This is...
Right.
It's one of those times where, like, everyone, you go, okay, everyone looked at this, the final product, and said, yeah, let's go ahead with this.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this movie is, like, the development of it, and, you know, again, I'm getting this from Wikipedia, so I don't know exactly how accurate this is, but apparently it was supposed to be a totally different film in Bakshi, the director, in his mind, and then when Paramount bought it, they, like, completely rewrote it, right?
He pitched it as a horror film about a guy, like, a guy has sex with a cartoon woman, and they produce a hybrid child who then tries to kill him.
Okay.
Which sounds awesome,
yeah.
Doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
A guy and a cartoon woman make a baby that tries to kill them.
I mean, it sounds way better than this version of Cool World, that's for sure.
Right. And so the Paramount was like, oh, we love that. That's perfect. Let's buy it. It's great. And they changed everything about it, which is what they do when they love something. United 93 was originally a romantic comedy. I don't know if you knew that.
Thank you, folks. Thank you.
They totally changed it, but Bakshi was already, like, contractually obligated to make whatever terrible thing they came up with, and he apparently hated it and hated the whole process of making it and everything about it.
Yeah, I saw that he said something like it totally wasn't worth it in the end or something like.
Yeah.
He thought it might be worth it just for the animation or something. As soon as he realized that everything had been kind of switched around on him story-wise. And Tyler, they actually brought in the writers who did Poltergeist and Poltergeist 2. For this one,
considering how much work it takes to make any movie, even a bad one, to think that this was made by someone who didn't even want to be making it, that's just got to seep into every frame of the movie to know that the guy just didn't even want to be doing this.
And because this movie it's like permeated with this feeling of just. Like dirtiness and just disgusting. Like everything about it just feels gross, and it's not necessarily because of the thrust of the movie is humans can't have sex with cartoons, which is just really bizarre concept.
It's a very sleazy. It just feels like a very sleazy.
Yeah, that's a great word for it. I mean, every single thing, like the animation style and stuff, and Eric, you mentioned Ren and Stimpy. It's like it kind of does remind you a little bit of some of that stuff that was going on in the early 90s with like Rocko's Modern Life and Real Monsters and all these kind of Nickelodeon-esque shows. And these things were all kind of drawn, you know, in a similar fashion. And, yeah, this is not, like, the slick kind of Disney animation that was going on at the time. This is much more, like, all the worlds that they've created within the Cool World, like, all the cityscapes, everything's really twisted and gnarled.
It's nightmarish. Do you remember the Twilight Zone movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The segment with the boy who can wish anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And remember, it reminds me of the animation in that segment.
Yeah,
like
totally.
The crazy, nightmare-y cartoons that he would make up and everything.
Yeah, and
it just seems like a terrible place to be.
Like, and like, you guys remember All Dogs Go to Heaven, where the dogs go to hell?
Oh yeah.
That's what it reminded me of too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. and even the sets too that like the live action actors are interacting with, they're kind of like these flat. Panels like this weird type of like almost
awful
cardboard looking material that's really it doesn't make any sense because like at one point Brad Pitt like drives up in a car and then you see it's a real car and then like it cuts to a wide shot and it's a flat like 2D side profile of a car and then he walks around to the front of it and then it switches to a flat 2D side panel of the front of the car behind him, like the world itself and the rules that are operating and nothing makes any sense. And yeah, Eric, like you said, they just seem to over and over again, just make things up as they're going along.
Well, I remember when Brad Pitt's character, gets dragged into Toontown, into a Cool World. And he's literally the only human being, the only flesh and blood human being in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a law against cartoons having sex with humans.
Wow, I didn't
that
realize
that seems like a waste of legislation when he's literally the only person that applies to.
And his job is to enforce it. I didn't even make that connection, really. Like, just on the nose, that is...
Yeah, his job is to go around making sure that, cartoons don't have sex with humans, and he's the only person who could possibly break that law.
A waste of legislation. Don't have sex with this one guy.
Yeah.
Well, we all know who it is.
Yeah, it's me. Think how bad that must make him feel. For there to be a law against the whole world having sex with you.
They look him up and down. Yeah, we're definitely not gonna have sex with you.
So when Gabriel Byrne's character, who is an artist who supposedly created Cool World while he was in prison, and they kind of touch on this concept just for half a second and then they never really delve into it, which I think would be really interesting, like the whole thing of him creating the world, but it actually existing before he was there. And
right, like did he create it, or did it already exist and he had a vision of it? Or
yeah, because he knows all the characters, even though he's never been there before. And they claim that they've been there, in the very beginning of the movie, it takes place in like the 40s and the world exists then. So it's like, there's a lot of questions that, like creationism questions and stuff that this
there's
movie
a brought. Lot of some really difficult theological questions in the movie.
But basically it's just about, Kim Basinger's character, who is amusingly named Hollywood, and the tagline for this movie is Hollywood if she could ... and she will.
It's yeah. Like,
okay, that's maybe that the worst yeah. tagline.
Holly wants to bone. what that means.
Yeah, so I mean
Holly needs some wood.
right there.
So yeah, they have like the concepts and maybe the loose ideas for like some interesting stuff here, and then they just completely throw that aside for like this really simplistic story of Jack Deebs, who's played by Gabriel Byrne, who gets sucked into Cool World and basically just has sex with Kim Basinger's cartoon, and then
this is his Jessica Rabbit that he created,
yeah,
and he's like yeah. like all horny cartoonists. Like draws this really buxom hot chick and then has the hots for her and then gets like actually gets to have sex with her.
Yeah.
Like doesn't she basically rape him?
Yeah, and I was gonna say that act is like the most passionless thing in this movie. Like,
yeah,
you don't even like really know that they're having sex until this big explosion happens afterwards, and you're like, yeah. Oh, I guess that's what was going on there.
I'm pretty sure he had his pants on still.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I think it was just humping the belt buckle.
One
free dry hump.
There's you're talking about like the character plays this kind of horny, perverted, whatever guy who draws all these big buxom women, and that's exactly what the filmmakers are doing here. Like Hollywood drives around in this gigantic penis car that's basically the vehicle from the Ambiguously Gay Duo from Saturday Night Live. I mean, it's like a direct ripoff of that. And there's just like sex and stuff everywhere, but everything about the movie is just like so dirty and gross that it kind of like it takes all the sexuality out of it and just makes you kind of cringe when you're watching it. You're like, oh,
go ahead, Tyler.
Well, not only that, and the animation is crappy. Like, I understand. I mean, the backgrounds and the cityscapes look pretty cool. I mean, it looked nightmarish, and I kind of dug that. But then when you got down to the actual movements of these characters, and like the one scene where I can't remember. It was like one of the opening scenes where Hollywood's singing in the bar, and there's all these wolves just kind of like nodding their heads to the music.
Yeah.
It's like the same animated GIF just with different colors.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like this, and like right off the bat, I was like, oh, this is just terrible animation. Like in Roger Rabbit, like everything was moving and kind of in sync with the voices and things like that. Like nothing was in sync in this movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a bold move to make a movie that's all about humans interacting with cartoon characters when you're not any good at making it look like humans are interacting with cartoon characters.
Sure, yeah, eye lines were all
like,
off.
Like, yeah, it's like the one you never for a second buy that they're in the same space at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like, and the whole movie hinges on that and they're no good at it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I feel like it's impossible to avoid comparing Cool World to Who Framed Roger Rabbit just because Roger Rabbit does everything that Cool World doesn't, and it did it
Cool World was almost certainly made specifically in response to Roger, like it was as a ripoff.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it's just, it's like the technology was, you know, supposedly 4 years better, but it looked way worse. And you know, everything from like character standpoint on, like all the characters in Roger Rabbit actually felt, you know, a little bit fleshed out, organic, like the interaction with the world, everything felt really just well done. And none of that is on display in Cool World. So plus the whole spike of power thing. What do you guys think about that at the very end?
Oh yeah. Like something, because there's going to be a rift, like they wind up, the Jessica Rabbit turns into a real woman and they go back to the real world, and then like it's going to tear apart the fabric of space and time or something, and it's in Las Vegas. That made even less sense than the rest of the movie, which didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that it's just that the protective device between separating these two things is some sort of spike stuck into a random hotel roof in Vegas. It's like, what?
Sure. Hadn't been mentioned since the first 60 seconds of the film.
Yeah,
they're all of a sudden, they're like, oh yeah, the spike, remember that shit? Yeah, let's go pull it out.
And then remember that really important thing? And then
like once they finally get, okay, so as you mentioned, the worlds do start to collide and all of these crazy cartoons like spill out into the real world, and eventually Gabriel Byrne turns into a cartoon superhero and then like plugs the hole with the spike, and every other cartoon goes back inside except for the little dock creature and the spider that was Brad Pitt's partner throughout the movie. And it's like, why wouldn't they get sucked back in? Every other cartoon did. This world makes no sense. And then the explanation offered by the old man, the old Doc character, Doc Harris, is the spike's power is beyond our understanding. So
his name was Dr. Whiskers. Brad Pitt's character was Harris.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. Close enough, though. Yeah, I assumed when Jack Deebs became a superhero that the actor had quit. And so they're like, how are we going to replace him? We'll just make him a cartoon character.
Doesn't Brad Pitt start to turn into a cartoon, even though he was never a cartoon to begin with?
He does, yeah, because he's...
Yeah, there's no reason for that to happen.
He's killed by a cartoon, and apparently when a human being is killed by a cartoon, he's turned into a cartoon.
In the real world...
He's resurrected as a. That's right. He's resurrected as a cartoon.
Yeah.
Which makes even less sense than the spike.
Yeah.
Which made.
Yeah, well, no,
less...
that part is actually in the Bible. That's, like, if a cartoon kills a human in the real world, the human is resurrected as a cartoon.
It's interesting that you mentioned Bible, because do you guys know anything about Tijuana Bibles? Have you ever heard of that before?
No.
It's like this really.
You can have had a donkey show.
It's like a. From what I recall, because I learned about this in college, so this was years ago. But anyway, they were these little manuals that got kind of spread around where people would draw dirty pictures of popular cartoon characters at the time.
I've heard of that.
And it just seems like this whole movie seems like one big Tijuana Bible, basically. So
why is it called a Tijuana Bible?
I don't know, Eric. I'm not sure.
Why is the word Bible anywhere near that?
Man, it's terrible.
So you're like flipping through the pages. You're like, this kind of reminds me of the Bible. Anybody else? No? Nobody? All right.
Yeah, so you can Wikipedia Tijuana Bible if you want to find
out. Don't think I'm not doing that right now.
Okay. All right. Well,
don't Google image it. You might get like the three caballeros in some type of weird situation.
I'm mostly concerned about Popeye.
Oh man,
there's seen his forearms.
So many jokes with that.
You think those were muscles? That's actually cancer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much going to bring us to the end of this discussion of Cool World. I think we all thought it was terrible and not worth seeing. And
no confidence. Thumbs down.
Not worth recommending for anyone. So
nope.
Except to say when you meet Brad Pitt, hey, that's the guy from Cool World.
Man, I love the half of that I saw.
Nice. Yeah. Well, yeah, Eric D. Snyder, I know you have to take off. You're going to go be on the Slash Filmcast, so people can check you out there. But why don't you tell everybody else where else on the internet they can track you down?
Well, they can also listen to – I have my own podcast that I co-host with Jeff Baer, Movie BS with Baer and Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
Just go to moviebs.com is where you'll find that. And if you don't want to hear my voice but want to read words that I wrote, film.com and ericdsnyder.com.
Nice.
What's
good stuff.
What's the question of the week on Movie BS?
Our question of the week is in conjunction with New Year's Eve, which comes out next week. Your favorite movie that takes place all in one day.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay.
thought provoking.
I'm gonna send my answer.
Do it.
Cool. All right. Well, Eric, I'll let you go ahead and take off. But thanks a lot for coming back. We had fun as always. So thanks.
Hey,
man.
Yeah. Thanks. Anytime. Glad to do it.
Cool. All right. Good
later,
luck.
Man.
We'll talk to you later.
Care.
See you guys.
All right. So Tyler, we've got a little bit of show left here, so let's go ahead and pull.
Oh, he's gone. Okay.
No, yeah, he's gone, but we're okay. Still going. Yeah.
I didn't hear him leave the room. Sorry.
Let's pull the Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week.
Yeah. Sure. All right, I pulled that lever, Ben, and this week we're not going to be just living hard. We're going to be dying hard.
Oh,
twice.
Twice. Double feature.
What's the German's name in the first one? Gruben? Groben?
Hans Gruber.
Gruber, that's right.
Yes.
One of my favorite villains in
yes.
film. Actually, Alan Rickman is my favorite villain in film.
There you go.
All of his villainous ways together into one man.
Awesome. So, yes, we are going to be watching Die Hard and Die Hard 2, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is subtitled Die Harder, which is kind of awesome.
Right. Christmas themed, too. They're both Christmas themed.
Exactly. And, yeah, that's kind of we threw a little Christmas thing into the Apple II there, and that's what it came up with. So, untraditional, but an action movie. I like it. So,
yeah, I'm going to put it out there right now, and you could send your emails our way. Die Hard 2, the best in the series.
Wow. Okay, we're going to have a debate about that next week.
Yep.
So that should be interesting. And speaking of emails, yeah, you guys can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. If you do.
We do have a voicemail. That's right.
You were getting ready to mock me.
The fact that we didn't have one, but we actually do.
We do have a voicemail this week. So yeah, if you send it in, you might sound something like this.
Hi Ben. Hi Tyler. This is Leo from Willamette, Connecticut. I thought my history with Cool World started when I was 9 years old. I recorded from a TV airing, and I actually enjoyed it. But rewatching again about 10 years later, it was really not good. I thought that Kim Basinger and Gabriel Byrne have no chemistry together, and Brad Pitt was really terrible in one of his early roles. After Falling Leaves. So whether you guys like it or not, who knows? We'll find out and see. It has a 3% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, so it indicates that it's really awful. So good luck with your podcast.
Hey, Leonardo, thanks for the voicemail.
Yeah, totally.
Good guy. You know, it's weird, though, Ben.
Yeah.
Google Voice actually created a transcript for that message, and it's so retardedly off what the voicemail actually said. I feel it deserves a quick read.
Yeah, so this is a thing that happens if you guys are not familiar with Google Voice. Basically, anytime people call and leave us a voicemail, we get an email about it, and it's got the voicemail attached to it in like a downloadable file, and it also decides to try to decipher what people are saying,
right,
and like spell it out for us. So just in case, I don't know, we don't have time to listen to the audio, we can kind of get a sense of what's going on. So yeah, Tyler, why don't you go ahead and read the completely messed up synopsis of Leo's voice.
You wanna hit that Google Voice slam poetry music?
Oh, F you for making me come up with something. But yes, we'll do that. Here we go.
All right.
Okay.
Like some of those bongo drum that you would hear at like a coffee shop.
All right. Go ahead.
Ready?
Yeah.
Ready? Hi there. Hi, Tyler. This is Leo. They got that part right, I think. I want to Connecticut. I saw her up. I guess it was Cool World started when I was here. Is all right recording from the CVRM. And I actually enjoyed it. But we're a large and again. That'll hey years later. I had to really not good about that. Give me a singer and give me over and have no from Judy ever seen. Brad Hill is really terrible in one of those early polls. After only use, so wondering if you guys later. Nice, so, and I was full, so I don't see it has a 3% real line tomatoes, so it indicates that it's really awful. So good luck with your Pontiac, hello.
Good luck with your Pontiac.
It's funny because Paul F. Tompkins does that on part of his act. So I just want to set that out there so we're not jacking anybody's shit.
Okay.
Fable right. style.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I mean,
still pretty funny.
Leo
pretty
brings funny. Up a good point. This movie with a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes, that is so abysmal. So
that's the critics' point of view, though. I think it's got some headway to make maybe in 50 years a cult classic, perhaps.
I don't know, man. A messed up cult to consider Cool World a classic.
I say James Cameron gets the rights to it and uses his avatar technology to improve it.
You know, that actually does sound like it would be kind of cool. So
I was being facetious.
I can see that happening, though, you know, something along those lines. They're doing all kinds of weird reboots of crazy franchises and stuff these days.
He should re-release Avatar and just make it Cool World.
That makes no sense, but
George Lucas re-releases the Star Wars movies.
Oh, yeah, I see. I gotcha. All right. You're
to watch Avatar, but it's actually a new version of Cool World.
So we also have an email this week, and I'll go ahead and this one is from Paige Turner. She says, could you boys do a compare and contrast of The Taking of Pelham 123 from 1974 versus The Taking of Pelham 123 from 2009? She says, I'm addicted to the 2009 version because of the alternate ending, but I recently came across the original movie and wanted some feedback. And then she gives us a list of movie suggestions, including Interview with the Vampire, Born on the 4th of July, A Few Good Men, The Last Samurai, Risky Business, The Color of Money, Cocktail, Mission Impossible, Jerry Maguire, and Collateral, all of which obviously are Tom Cruise films. So,
Days of Thunder on there?
Days of Thunder is not. That was one of our early episodes.
That's right. I forgot.
Joint one with Top Gun. But
Paige Turner, if we do another Tom Cruise movie, you need to come on and guest.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Sent us emails a couple times, and maybe we can have like a month of fan guests.
If
we get enough feedback that is positive from that.
Yeah. To kind of briefly touch on her point, Tyler, have you ever seen The Taking of Pelham 123?
Which one?
Either.
No.
Why would you ask me which one, then? It doesn't matter.
I guess that's a bit run around there.
Just say no. I've seen the original one, and I thought it was really well done. The new one looks terrible. I've never seen it. I don't know anything about an alternate ending, but maybe one of these days we could do a double feature comparing two of them if they happen to end up on Netflix Instant or something, and maybe we could do like some audience submissions, because we actually got some feedback via Twitter this week about taking suggestions from the audience, which is something we tried to do early on in the run of this podcast, but I don't think we had built up any fan base at all then.
We got zero suggestions.
Yeah. So I'll do cocktails
since Brian Bummer's in there.
Okay, yeah, Brian Brown.
Brian.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for the email, Paige. We appreciate it. Also, you guys can feel free to follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. You can subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Leave us a review there. That would be great. Take just a second and go say, hey, you guys suck, or hey, you're awesome. Give us a rating. And then, because that's how the world works these days. Everything is either
you suck
or it's awesome.
Right. No middle ground.
If
you're a moderate.
You can check us out on Facebook as well, so we're over there too. Eric's already taken care of the character name game this week, so I guess, Tyler, pretty much all we have left is going back and forth and telling people where they can find more of our work this week on the internet. Let's start with
you. This week, I'm going to try to start the Lord of the Rings omnibus, trilogy of movies reviews.
Mm-hmm.
The official of reviews of those films, I believe we established last week.
Yep.
Never before done on the internet. this week as well at the Solar Sentinel is the chapter one of a comic that you and I have worked on previously. And, I'm going to let the people assume that this is a real thing, not something fan-made.
Well, you had kind of teased this a few weeks back and said that you could explain what it was once some work was actually done. So why don't you tell people a little bit more about that?
A couple years ago, 6 years ago, Ben and I came up with the idea of us in the West. So we created these characters, Swift and Steel, who would basically be us in the West if we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And this new entry is kind of a reintroduction to the characters. Really nothing goes on except for what, I mean, you can get from the story what the title says, The Search for Thomas Bowes. You can kind of tell what we're figuring out in the first chapter. But the second chapter is going to be pretty action-packed because something goes down on our way to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, stay tuned. Keep checking the Sentinel or, yeah, the Sentinel.
Yeah, and you can...
I want those page views.
At thesolarsentinel.blogspot.com, you guys can find links to the original series that Tyler and I created all those years ago. It's a like kind of a self-contained 10-issue arc, if you will. So
yeah.
If you guys are fans of the stuff
that
we do...
Shitty art, but it's gotten a lot better.
And you want to go back and check that kind of stuff out. It's The Adventures of Swift and Steel. You can probably find it in Google somewhere, I don't know, if you don't want to do it that way. So anyway, check that out. I'm excited to see where this goes. And I just was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and they're like, hey, you should do a movie about that, like an animated film. And I was like, oh, man, little did you know that The Search for Thomas Bowes actually did originate as an animated film. And then you and I switched it over to novel form and started writing it as a novel. And now it's found life as another comic. So good stuff.
Well, I still want to get that that 15-minute episodic series on Adult Swim that is a Western.
Mm-hmm.
Patent pending.
Yep.
Trademark, copyright, all that stuff now.
Yeah, there's a lot of Western stuff. A lot of Western stuff hitting TV these days. That's like the big trend that's coming back around. So
I think that may be because of this first issue of Swift and Steel.
They heard rumors that it was coming out, so they
I know, right?
Forward, yep.
I mentioned the Fellowship of the Ring review. Mm-hmm. That and that's it, I guess.
You can find that at notjustnewmovies.com, and Tyler also runs the podcast, or I'm sorry, the Twitter for our podcast, so
yes,
you guys can find him over there too. So you can find me at twitter.com/benpears, writing at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast, and you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. Music for this episode comes courtesy of the terrible score for Cool World. Just like everything else about that movie, it was awful. So thanks for enduring this episode, enduring the movie with us. If you guys happen to check it out, shoot us an email, let us know what you thought of Cool World. We will be watching the first two Die Hard movies, which I guarantee are way better than Cool World. And if you guys are fans of Die Hard, shoot us an email, give us a call, leave us a voicemail, let us know what you think. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.